Comrades and friends, this is a public service announcement. I know that when I say this, some people will erroneously conclude that this is about someone specific they know. It isn't, of course, but you assuming it is all part of the joke. It actually is the funniest part of the joke. You see what I mean? Anyway, this is the announcement. I will not be explaining jokes, satire, goofs, or gags. I will never say, when I make something up, that I made it up. Often I'm being sincere, sometimes I'm putting you on, but I respect my audience and myself too much. I know some people are confused, it's just because I'm very good at it. No one has done anything like this before. Doing deep dives on academic stuff, talking to local politicians, writing our own bits and scripts, making fun of the most powerful people in the state and their dumb ideas. I understand why it's overwhelming and why you might be confused. That actually makes it funnier. Some people will not get it. I understand that. That's more or less the point, and I will not be elaborating further. The only thing I can suggest is this. If you are a listener of a certain category, and don't worry, you'll know if you are, and you hear something that you do not understand, try context clues. Do like deep breathing exercises. And subscribe at patreon.com/thehighlandsbunker. And for $5,000 a month, I'll tell you all our secrets. In the shadow of Rockford Tower, behind enemy lines, in the belly of the Delaware Way Beast. I'm Rob. This is the Highlands Bunker podcast. Welcome to it. Very happy to have sort of full crew. Carl in the house, as usual. Super producer Carl, hello.
Hello.
W.C. Martin Esquire for legal advice is in the house. Bill, hello.
Hey, good evening, Rob. And for anyone who's curious, I will explain any of the inside jokes about that Chris Coons goes to the ice cream shop bit for free on the house.
That's fine. That's actually a good one. We give that for free. And if you want to know how we did the Chris Coons ice cream shop bit,
just, you know, ask me.
Just ask Bill when you see him. And you will see him around town because everybody sees everybody.
It's true.
Our guest tonight is a first-time studio, and I believe we spoke with her during COVID over Zoom, I think. Yeah. It's from the 8th Representative District in Middletown, Ray Moore. Hello, Ray.
Hello, good evening.
How are you doing?
I'm okay. That drive above the canal, I haven't been here in a while. But
yeah, we're here.
Yeah.
We're still here.
Glad to be here.
I guess you get a break. Well, not a break, but a little bit of a break going to Dover. So it's not as far as it would be going from Wilmington. So it's not too bad. Yeah. So what's 20 minutes maybe?
Yes, 20 minutes to go to Dover now that I'm an educator in Middletown. So I don't really come to Wilmington like that anymore.
Yeah, no partying, not out partying.
Not in Delaware. Everyone knows everyone.
Yeah, that's a great point. That's a great point. Yeah, you can't really go to the Starboard, can you? I mean, not that I would, but you can't. Well, the first thing I want to talk about, and I do have like some serious stuff, and then we'll get into some fun stuff. But before we get into like pending legislation, I wanted to tell you personally that I appreciated everybody who fought SB 21, the corporate bill.
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate it because it was the right thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really appreciate it because, as you probably know, we have really good sources that were doing a lot of work with this sort of in and around the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And so we also understand what kind of pressure you were under from some of the dumbest people we know. And I have to tell you that I don't think people understand that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And like the paces that you have to go through and like the literal drag you have to listen to. And I just wanted to, from the bunker to you personally, but to everybody, thanks for standing up for us.
Thank you. I hate that it was the argument that we don't care about protecting, you know, a third of our budget. And it's like, no, I do care, but also can we challenge ourselves to not be here and to understand that this is a problem and how we got here. Also, what about the middleman that's being cut, the little people that's being cut out, the shareholders? What about the responsibility that we have to them? And we're literally, a big piece of this is telling us not to do this or to just at least slow down. If it's something that important, just let's take the time in the process. And it's like, I became a corporate lawyer overnight in addition to the environmental things happening. And I'm like, this is so out of education league, but I have a duty as a legislator to understand the complexities of this. And it is very complex. I still don't even think. But then it's also, you have to stop. This was actually SB 21 was the first time I had hundreds of constituents reaching out to me to vote no. I had to listen. There is many of them came to me and said, you know, we trust you. We know you're smart. We know you're educated. But what I've read about this, I have concerns about it. And if you vote for it, because you have come to my door where you voted for something, I asked you not to, and you did it anyway. But this time we're going to hold you accountable. I have to listen.
I would say this too. I mean, certainly the details of these corporate laws and statutes, can talk in circles or use words that need to be defined about what that means, what that doesn't mean. But let's be very honest, and this is something I've said before, the concept is not complicated. Mm-hmm. Legislators were afraid, scared. I mean, they're generally scared anyway, of even perceived or potential arguments. And so they wanted to make sure that the interests of huge capital, very small, slice of interest, could do more of what they wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Like the way that they were doing it to allow for people to maybe sidetrack the board of directors or whatever, like that can get a little in the weeds. But the fact of the matter is that's it. So, Meta comes to town and puts the governor up against a wall and says, you're going to do this. And Townsend goes and they do it. That's it. It's not like, and that was kind of the thing that made me the most upset as I was following the arguments back and forth. It's like, You could bring up a specific objection to it, and then they'll find a corporate lawyer to come in and tell you that specific thing isn't necessarily what you thought it was. But we're not really using that specific thing as a specific objection. We're saying we don't want to increase the power and of capital. We don't want to give the oligarchs even more than they've already taken.
Or like evidence that you'll react to their wish immediately on a fast track, And when you make a filing at the Division of Corporations, you can request like immediate, like 1 hour turnaround. And that's what they basically did here, right?
Yeah.
But I also think that they take certain areas of policy, right? That it takes really a certain level of complexity to understand. They overpower all these big jargons on purpose, right? We see that happening, systematically already, depending on where you go, just to ice somebody out and just say, okay, I'm overwhelmed already, so I'll take your word for it. That's the build-up pressure. So then you have when someone actually challenged back, why are we doing this? Why is this important? But this is what I read, and I have questions. When you come up with questions, now all of a sudden you're a problem. But my constituents elected me not to just go along, but I should be questioning because this is my duty as an elected official here. I need to be accountable for whatever I choose to do and stand behind that. You see now, there's some people who don't even stand behind what they did.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting next year. Because there's this idea that because the supporters of SB 21 or the champion, some people kind of just voted to go along to get along, which, again, I guess that doesn't matter considering the situation because it was going to pass sort of regardless.
Mm-hmm.
It's still very cowardly, but we won't get into that part right now.
Well, I'll say, like, just to piggyback off something that Ray said about the complexity of these corporate law bills. And it's usually like a package. I think, I'm talking a little bit out of my butt at the moment, but like for decades, these were presented to the legislature with zero deliberation. I think they were like probably just rubber stamped in committee. And it's been what now? We're on year three of mounting a challenge, right? So not only the optics of how it's run through the legislature, but to the substance of these bills. And it's a bit rewarding to see, even though the results haven't been great. But yeah, I think they use that complexity as a bit of a cudgel for a long time. Like, you guys aren't going to understand this. Just listen to the experts and get back to whatever it is you do here, right?
Yeah. And I do remember now what I was going to say, because Ray brought up constituents, and you know, next year, you know, some of these chickens are going to come home to roost, and you know, the supporters are like, you know, it doesn't matter how many corny jokes you can make about not knowing who Elon is, or pretending like it's not about Elon, or yelling at people that it's not about Elon. Elon is a symbol, an avatar for the oligarchy. And Elon was also the individual who began this idea that you don't get treated fairly in Delaware because you can't negotiate with yourself and you can't do a bunch of weird shit. So the fact of it is that you can say, but Elon already took his company away, so it's not about him, and that's not going to fucking fly. So I suggest keep saying that. Keep pretending that, and we'll keep hitting you on that, and we'll see who wins. Because, like, yeah, we understand how time works, but we also understand how politics works. So you're going to have your picture next to Elon doing a Sig Heil on a piece of campaign lit from God knows where. God knows who paid for it or who sent it out. But that's just how it's going to be, and you're going to be mad. You're going to fucking cry. You're probably going to, you know, you're going to have some kind of fit. You're going to you'll be deleting comments off of Facebook. Who would delete a comment off of Facebook? Jeez, that's crazy. I mean, you're going to say, oh, Working Families Party is behind it. Oh, the whole great, yeah, because of the huge budget that the Working Families Party has. You fucking dipshits. But yeah, this is what's going to happen now. And and to Bill's point, it hasn't happened before. So I'm really looking forward to people melting down. Because a lot of them melted down during that 2-week or 3-week stretch of SB 21. So when there's going to be sustained pressure about how they hopped to and did whatever the oligarchy wanted them to do, that we're going to see some people probably mentally break. And hopefully it's people on my list. Anyway, thank you.
Well, I hope I'm not on your list.
Well, you can bet that you're not.
Okay.
There's my list of that on, that you're on is actually very short, but that's another thing. We'll be dealing with that. We'll be dealing with that next year too. Yeah. Well, let's get into it. Let's get into a couple of things that I was looking at today, and I want to kind of segue into the school lunch bill, the work you've done for a couple of years and where it is today. But I also want to talk about very quickly a bill that I heard about today, because it actually, the issues with it are the same as the issues with school lunch. And because everybody tries to fine tune it out of its mind rather than just stating the obvious and trying to fix a problem or support people. So there's a bill that's going to be in committee this week, SB 10, compassionate release. Everybody knows my position on prisons. They're gulags. We've left people. I mean, it's unconscionable what we've done in the state, in the Department of Corrections. Currently, it's very, very difficult to apply for compassionate release. It has a name. There's some kind of legal name to it. I wrote it down here somewhere, and I don't have it. But 4217 modification, that's what they call it. So you can apply. But you have to be almost basically infirm. Like, it's very, very difficult. So what this bill does, and we got to pass this bill. There's no question about that, SB 10. What it does is it says, okay, if you're on a life sentence, but you're over the age of 60, and you've served 15 years, I think. If you're over the age of 16, you've served 15 years. Or you're any age, and you've served 25 years. you're now allowed to apply for compassionate release. So it's just like, we know we have a problem, but we have to make it, we have to make the rules so tight that, like, we don't look like, God forbid, we let out a 70-year-old person who only served 14 years or whatever. You know what I mean? It's just like, obviously, there's another piece of it, and that is you have to demonstrate, there's a rehabilitation piece. I don't know how that works. I'm assuming the state goes through and does it like it would do for parole maybe or whatever. So you also have to meet all the criteria as a rehabilitated person. But I thought to myself, once again, you're going to engineer this thing within an inch of its life.
Yeah, I think a lot of legislators wanted to be like college admissions people in a different life. Like, I think that they do love, especially those who are like on the Joint Finance Committee, I think they like hearing you apply. You know, what's your worth to me?
Yeah, and they love figuring out, like,
let's means test your life.
Let's put all these criteria. We love checking lists, like, do you follow this through? We can't just say we have a lot of older people that have served a lot of time. They're no longer dangerous, if they ever were. And so maybe we can come up with a decent plan to get people back with their families for the last, you know, bit of their life. Or whatever. We can't do that. We need a terrible process to put people through the ringer, as you said, and means test their life. It's just weird. And then I did my due diligence on school lunches. So do you want to give just some background, because you were briefly mentioning it before, so we can talk about sort of what the background is for the last few years, and then we'll talk about what's happened in the last few weeks.
So I started to research just because I'm just like, oh, you know, being in a classroom is one reason why I ran for office. And I tell my students all the time, I take y'all and y'all concerns and y'all issues to Dover, and I'm never going to forget. So I just started, like, just reading. All right, so I'm a nerd, and I read dissertations for fun. I know it's, like, yuck, right? But I just like to know what's the latest research on things, what are working for other states, what other states are doing, what can we do? So school meals is something that had came up. And I'm like, oh, universal school meals. Oh, Massachusetts, Connecticut, whatever they're doing, I feel like we need a copy and paste, because their outcomes are speaking volumes from the work that their legislature are doing in partner with their schools and the school district and the Department of Education, right? So before I actually started moving on it, it was a year. And it was in my first year being elected. So then my second year, it's something had came up in our school district where student lunch debt was at $10,000, and it was only about to be October. And I was like, oh my God, I was sitting on this. Like, you know, it's here. It's happening in Delaware. Oh, it's happening in Delaware. So then I started getting momentum, researching it, reaching out to other states that have made moves on this legislation, trying to work with our Department of Education and figuring out what, if we did this thing here, what does it look like going through the process? So when I say that this legislation has been blood, sweat, and tears, the blood part is, okay, I'm in a room full of men, okay? But
wait a minute.
Guilty as charged.
When I was in labor with my youngest son, I was still working on this legislation. Literally in labor. I'm on the phone in between, you know, vomiting, in between contractions, working still on this legislation to make sure it was as great as I can get it. To all the things that I've been working on, it was put together to present it to the public to be released. So then that, you know, literally birthed HB 125. Last session, I had to meet in the middle because it's like, it's a high fiscal note. And I just want to note, when I first came on a podcast back in 2020, we talked about a phrase, not is more than just a math problem. And that is what we're still dealing with today. It's a math problem. And it's like, this is, we're talking about the most vulnerable population right now. The ones that in education is always about a test score. So before we're talking about test scores, talk about the child that is sitting in front of me who's hungry. What am I supposed to do with them? Like, you know, a lot of educators actually have a additional grocery bill because they put snacks and food in different access to proper nutrition, because it's always a healthy thing, to make sure that the kids are not burning out in their classes, right? And I challenge, you know, my colleagues to think, how long can you sit without something to eat? Let someone be hangry. What's going to happen to you? So what do you think is going to happen with a child whose brain is still developing, who still have, you know, all these presenting emotions in front of you? So last year, you know, someone ran a sub bill right after I filed 125 to, you know, to cover reduced price meals. We worked together, and that's where we ended up with the legislation. But I said it in the record then, and everyone knew I was coming back with 125 again, because I believe that this is the funnel. This is the student's right. We have a right. Students have a right to have access to school nutrition and should not worry about income and how much it costs and if they have the money to make sure that they are getting the proper nutrition while they're in school. So we're back again. I filed it back in the beginning of March. I was still working on it with the Department of Education, because there's a lot happening on the federal level and someone won't take a nap, you know, or stop exercising his right to stroke a pen, you know. So we never know what's coming, and I do believe in being prepared. And through the conversations that is now we're being forced to have, it scares me that we're not prepared enough. And as someone who operates out of solutions, it's like Delaware was already reactive to a lot of policy things, as we talk about environmental things, even as you talk about SB 10, right? These are things that we have known that existed in our society for so long, and we're just now getting to it. And I don't want that to be the state of our education. You know, I'm glad to have a governor that has had experience with actually being a classroom teacher and what all it takes to, it goes into that.
So 3 months, was it 3 months? Give or take.
Could have been a couple years.
Who's to say? I told a joke again.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm so sorry. Go ahead, Ray.
No, you're fine. But it's still, you know, it's the value experience of, there's in theory and then there's practice. There is in theory that kids just throw food away and they're wasteful. And it's like, well, there's certain kids that don't open a book. So should we still not give them a textbook? Do we mean test the materials that we're providing in schools? Do we say that the, you know, only the wealthy get the books because they can afford it? So what is the level of we need to feed children that makes it so hard and makes it an arguable situation? Because why are we arguing over should kids eat while in school?
I do have one question about the fiscal note. I was going to go on one of my rants about how I don't give a shit about the fucking find hundreds of millions of dollars to give to the port. But has anyone ever done an analysis on OMB or whoever does these? I don't know what they call it.
Scaletti.
Yeah. Has anybody ever looked and said, okay, well, they estimated that this was going to cost X, and we did the thing,
but it actually cost X, as much. Yeah.
Or did it cost X plus or X times 2? Or, you know, did it cost only, you know, 0.6X? Like, what has, does anybody know how good they are at it?
No, I'm actually, you know, trying to figure out who is the person, like, who one comes up with means of revenue and new different streams of revenue, and then who is it to figure out if the money that is being allocated and, you know, put aside for different things actually have been used, and did it cost that much that it said? So that's kind of partial of JFC. And if, you know, I can't so I'm in, if you find an answer before me, let's compare notes, because I do believe that it costs so much. There's a lot of things that cost a lot of money. And we just gave $21 million to build a building that's not beneficial to the future of Delaware. So when we talk about fiscal notes, there's bills that have fiscal notes to it, but who and what are we prioritizing? That is what my new change perspective, especially in this general session, has to be. Who and what are we prioritizing? When, especially if the state budget is so tight, right? I tell everyone, I spend money. If I have to look to save the money, I'm willing to be fiscally responsible, right? But like, how are we doing this? I legitimately have questions. I don't know. I mean, I talked to the Comptroller General Office, who does the fiscal notes, to figure out where can we look to get this money. I know this money exists somewhere, you know, but that's a whole list of conversations that has to happen with the legislature in itself. But then it's like, who's organizing to facilitate these conversations? And also, are they going to be controlled conversations because they want us to think a certain way and to think a certain thing? And it's just like, I just have natural questions that.
Yeah, I want to say a few things about this. I guess the first thing I'll say is that through my poking around today, I found out that somebody went off on their own who was, I think, sits on the JFC as well. Which is, look, I don't know if her people are listening to this, if it'll get back to her. Kim Williams, I don't know what you're up to. As far as I know, you're like a realtor. You got a weird haircut, and that's it. That's all I know. Whether you should be making these decisions, I really don't know. I don't know what you're talking about. But I will say this. You did the thing. You did the means testing thing where you had to get your calculator out and you got to say, federal poverty line is this, and that gets changed. And then you raise that to the power of two, and then you combine that and you say three times, and it's $72,000 for this year. And then you figure out what you're trying to figure out is who deserves to eat and who doesn't. That's a very odd process to undertake, to sit there with your abacus and move the beans around and figure out which kids deserve to eat and which kids don't. I just find that very strange. Now, the trick is, and this is something I learned today that I did not know, and maybe Ray can elaborate on this. A fiscal note is only good for, they can only project costs and outlays over 3 years. So we can do this dumb calculation for 3 years, and then in the fourth and fifth year, we can start doing what you're supposed to do and make it a universal program. Because what isn't in this calculation, when you do all the numbers and move and you square root the you know, all that, and you figure out the slope of the curve, there's a social issue that comes with that, about looking at everything, about who deserves it and who doesn't, who's getting it and who isn't, who's paying for it and who's not. There's a very dark social problem that comes out of that. We're actually seeing it now. And we can get around that. We can't calculate it. We don't know how bad that is. We know that it's bad because we all sort of see that people resent the fact that, you know, maybe somebody's on Medicaid or somebody gets a free lunch or whatever it is. So we know that it's bad, but it's not part of the calculation. We don't know how to put that in. So we just pretend like, just kind of shrug our shoulders.
Like we're a business. We're like, we got to make cuts somewhere. That's kind of the attitude. I wanted to say something to Ray's point about, like, well, where are we going to find the money here? Like, who is this benefiting? Where you got to help me out here. But, you know, I guess co-chair of the JFC during education funding chats, I think this was in relation to a commission that met this spring. She said, what are we going to do now? What are we doing now that's not working? Let's fix it. Just adding money to something doesn't mean it's going to fix the problem. And the AIR report, which I think is the one that did say that, right, the
school district,
we need $1 billion, mm-hmm. which sounds like a lot, but it's, you know, it's a state's education system. It's like literally our future. And the AIR report says $500 million to $1 billion. But I still don't understand, if we had $1 billion, what would we do? So, you know, there's a lack of some imagination there. There's, I think that's laying bare that even if we could do universal programs that, you know, make our students perform better.
The data shows that. But when we talk about experts, it's when do you pick and choose who's the expert? You don't want to listen to the educator. Mm-hmm. So you want to listen to whom? But we had to listen to the corporate lawyers that was provided and chose to come to us about this bill that is so critical. But the data shows it. There's not only state data on it, there's national data on it, you know? And it's like, okay, so again, we're picking and choosing where we're going to invest. So don't lead with a test score. Don't talk to me about literacy, because we're not doing the first thing. Students should, food insecurity is not going down since COVID. It is massively increased, and it is more than just a math problem.
Yeah, I think the thing that got me sort of fired up today too is when we were talking about it on another call. I got a lot of my information. Shout out Cheyenne Miller. Cheyenne Miller was on the call that I'm talking about. So
she's a rock star.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that goes without saying.
I hope a friend of the show. Let's hope.
I mean,
it's only been like a month, but
she saved my ass on a few occasions.
Yeah, I bet.
She was just mentioning like somebody like Mike Smith, whose thing is always like, well, my kids don't need it. So why should my kids get it? And I'm like, well, I feel like I just explained it.
Do you think they make a plate for your kids, and then if they don't eat it, they just throw it out? Like, is that what he actually thinks?
I don't know if he thinks that, but some people do. The state's paying for something that he could pay for himself.
Right.
Which, again, okay.
Yeah.
Who cares? Like, some people can pay for their own roads.
Right.
Some people can pay. Like, that's not the point. Like, when people say that stuff, and this is why Mike Smith specifically gets sticks in my crawl, because I know he's like the nice guy, because he's like a younger guy, and I think he drives a Jeep, and, you know, so he's a Jeep guy and all this stuff. And so he's like, oh, you know, he has a little bit of a personality. Most of the Republicans down there are fucking dolts. I mean, let's be honest. But when you say stuff like that, it just shows that you're just filling an ideological space for morons. And there's no getting around that. And I feel like nobody just says, yeah, well, that's stupid. Because that's not the point. The point, number one, the point is that everybody's supposed to get it. This is why I've said it over and over again. Everything, universal programs are best because everybody deserves it, number one. And number two, it ameliorates this resentment within the community. Yes. Number two, or three, however many. There was a 1 and a 1A to begin with. Number two, the fact is, there is a mechanism to get more revenue. I know that there's the income tax brackets, the Cuoco tax brackets that he tried to do for 15 fucking years. We could get more revenue. I live here. I live in this neighborhood over here. We do a bunch of reconnaissance right there in the Highlands. I mean, we're looking at $100,000, $150,000 cars, multiple cars, million-dollar homes. You know, people with they got a place at the beach. They got a place at the fucking, let's go. Okay, if we don't have the money, go get the fucking money. Because either kids eat or they don't eat. You know, if you can't explain that to somebody, we can find somebody else who can. So, where is 125 in the process? How is it working with this other sort of plan? We'll call it the Man, I was going to do it, but I'm not going to do it. We'll call it the real estate agent plan. Where are we at with, I know there's a hearing this week.
This week on Wednesday.
This week on Wednesday. What committee will be hearing?
It would be in House Education at 3 o'clock. If you are a believer that students should have access to school meals, breakfast and lunch, please show up in support of this. It's, again, it's more than just a math problem. The picking and choosing of who gets what and when, that has to go away, because that is what birthed the society of massive problems that we face today, that we're still currently trying to overturn, currently trying to change. Some of us, you know, if you don't lack the political will that and believe that everyone. So it's also the misconception, like, why should I pay for it? Well, let me be clear, you know, this is going to be a state funded program. So your tax dollars is going towards feeding your children and everyone else's. It's a community collaborative. And when we talk about, you brought it up, like, can we just be a little, like, just be a little creative in our thinking? Don't be afraid of something that it doesn't exist yet, but it should, because I have a whole universal plan. We could talk about childcare as well, throw that in there. You know, it also, it's the cost savings. It was, on average, will save a family $1,200 a year by doing this. This is our constituency who the middle class, we could talk about who the economy backs is on, especially at this time of inflation, everything else that's going on, right? At least we can say to our constituencies, we are giving something back. We're taking this on and we're giving something back to you all who has been working so hard and you continue to work. Because if all the working families leave Delaware, what is Delaware going to be? And how friendly are we being to middle class? My constituency is middle class families. And I have a middle class family. I am Delaware. I am working to protect everyone and their families, and also giving hope, you know, to make sure that children can dream without limitations on their potential. And it starts just as minimum as having access to school meals.
I think that's all we have. We've said everything we can say about that. Yeah. I mean, we need to come together to do, especially kids too. When you're talking about, like, okay, you know, maybe you want to. It's bad enough when adults have to jump through these hoops or feel like they're going to lose something or not understand what the equation is. You know, how to do the math. That's already bad. But for an issue like this, it's just so nakedly ridiculous.
It really reminds me of, like, when you talk about a minimum wage with these people and what a living wage is and what a proper working wage is, and they let it slip out every time. It's like, this should just be for teens for their spending money. You know what I mean? Like, and these are the same people who are like, we can't do universal school lunches because what about the rich kids who are going to get the school lunches? The same argument was made, I guess, about student loan relief. You know, do we want the family with a $500,000 annual income getting their loans forgiven? Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I would be fine with that. Mm-hmm. I know not everyone would be, but.
Well, because, and the other thing is, if you think that somebody who makes $500,000 a year didn't deserve to get their student loans forgiven, then raise their taxes.
Yeah. Right.
Problem solved. I just did it. Put me in a goddamn legislature.
Thanks for fixing the math problem.
because think about it. I mean, luckily we know some well-to-do people. Do you think that you're going to give them give them a debt jubilee, wipe out whatever they owe? 50 grand, 25 grand, 10 grand, 100 grand, whatever. Doctor. Oh, you know, this guy's a doctor. A woman's a lawyer. Why are you writing her loans off? Why not? If they make a huge income, tax it back. That's it. That's how this stuff works. Mm-hmm. But it's like we don't want to give it, so we need a reason to say that some people don't deserve it. because we don't want to do the other thing either. It's just, you know, there's a way around this that's pretty straightforward and workable. People just do not want to accept it.
No, and I mean, I would definitely hope that we're not going to let Sarah Huckabee be better than Delaware, who just signed legislation. Sarah Huckabee.
she believes she's the governor of Arkansas. Right?
Yes, and they just signed into law their universal breakfast program, and it's going to phase in school meals, make it lunches too. So again, are we going to let Sarah Huckabee? This is a Democratic-controlled state, right. So we're going to let Sarah Huckabee be better than us.
Or we're going to do things like, and this is something I that Cheyenne said today that I agree with, or we're going to let people that are supposed to be Democrats agree with Mike Smith.
Mm.
Like, are you out there to help us out or not? I mean, time will come next year where, you know, we're going to have this conversation.
Yeah.
Because really the people who don't want kids to eat are the Nnamdis of the world. That's the people. I mean, am I lying? I don't think so.
Yeah, it's probably in the record.
This is a public record.
Right.
So look, Nnamdi doesn't want your kid to eat. That's it. You know, and I don't care about the math. I don't care about that.
I think it is very sad that it's the realization that there has to be an argument on should children have access to food. Like, it shouldn't be a political talking point. I don't know when it became a bipartisan, nonpartisan issue, a party line talking point. Children should have access to proper nutrition, and especially we're mandating them to go to school.
Yeah, they're mandated to go to school. They don't pay for their books. They don't pay for the desk. They don't pay for the bus ride. They don't pay for the basketballs or the footballs or whatever in the gym. It's all part of going to school. You can't give somebody put them there and then have them expect to have some sort of expense. That's not the way this was supposed to work.
Exactly. But the one thing that is going to empower them to make sure that, you know, it goes correlation to, they always say, you know, we need certified and highly trained teachers teaching our children so they can read. In tandem, they need to make sure they have proper nutrition. So to all the things that you just named, we don't make them pay for, we don't means test a desk or a pencil. I don't look at a student and say, oh, you decked out in Nike today. Your outfit costs way more than anything I'm wearing because I'm going to secondhand hand-me-down stores. Therefore, today you have to buy a pencil from me because your outfit, your presenting outfit seems like you can afford a pencil. So don't ask me for my free pencils, for my pencils, because you have enough money to do it. That's not fair. The kid going to look at me crazy and like, Miss Moore, you done lost. You really done lost it now.
Like, do you even have pencils to sell? Right, is that allowed?
You can't sell me a pencil. So like, why are we selling meals to school, to children?
Is there still, I mean, I know Mike Smith tried to do Mic'd Up. Is Mic'd Up still a thing? Are we still Mic'd Up? Does he still have a podcast? Because I'd love to come on the podcast and explain this with him. But I know, like, we do podcasts. He kind of, like, fooled around, like, you know, I don't think he was serious about it.
I didn't know
he certainly doesn't have a studio that's as beautiful as the studio.
No, shout out to the studio. It's definitely a vibe.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I wasn't compliment fishing, but I'm glad that you thought, I'm glad you thought I was. So I appreciate that very much. Okay, so we're going to segue into some maybe funner stuff, maybe deeper stuff, who knows. So I have a question. Does anybody know who Laura Shaw Del Percio? That's what it is, Percio. Anybody know this person?
Aren't you Italian?
can't see, bud. You're right. That is kind of a disgrace. I had to do this to say it. So this post was on Facebook. Classic boomer dipshit post. Black background, white lettering. Working Families Party equals communism. You know that, right? I love the you know that, right. because that's like the chef's kiss to prove this person is an imbecile. If you know Laura, please have her contact the show. Because if she's doing dumb stuff like this, her kids are probably going to run away from home. Does she have kids? Do we know? If she does have kids, they should run away. Things are going to need to have to happen here. I don't know whether, I don't know what her situation is. Maybe she's having some kind of mental thing. She needs like help in that regard. But I'm starting to get a little bit, a little bit mad that people don't know what communism is. Hmm. Like, I don't really care. Like, I am a communist. I think we should communally say buy kids school lunches, or communally make sure everybody has health care, or communally make sure everybody can afford their housing.
Hmm.
Now, if you think you're a historian and you want to come in here and talk to me, I would be happy to do that. That would be super. Because I suspect that this person doesn't know what the fuck they're talking about. But here's the thing. I've been getting this more and more lately from people that don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And I might start going out dressed as Lenin every day. just to start the conversation. Yeah, just to get the conversation.
Let's talk about what it actually means to be.
Yeah, I mean, the other interesting point is, like, we don't mind central planning around how corporations use our franchise. We don't mind central planning when we're figuring out how not to give people stuff. Then we centrally plan the shit out of it. We go through, we figure out, we do math, we do algorithms, we have a process by which, they go behind the curtain and give you a fiscal note. So we plan, but we only plan to not give people stuff.
Mm.
If we plan to give everybody something, we're the reddest of the red. Right. Well, then I'm the reddest of the red. Me and August Village. You know what I mean? I don't give a shit. But that particularly, I just wanted to point that out because there's a lot of people listening to this who are fans who I know personally are very confused by this matter. They say things like, "Well, it's never worked anywhere before." I'm like, "Come on, buddy. You know that's silly." Well, why? Well, I mean, let's all relax. You don't know what you're talking about. Stop saying it, or you're going to get made fun of on the show. And I know you don't want to. People don't want to be made fun of. So if you don't want to be made fun of, stop saying something's communism because you don't know what the fuck it is you're talking about. Thank you. Second Working Families Party story. And I want to kind of sort of frame this with this idea that I've been talking about before. And Ray, you can give whatever feeling you want to. I do find it interesting that, the derangement syndrome. Like, what's Working Families Party doing? Why are they doing it? What are they doing? What's happening? Like, completely, like, people just melting down, losing their minds. It's interesting because these are the same people who, find some of the Republicans so nice and, they're my buddy and they're nice. And or even at the national level, we hear, national Democratic politicians saying, well, we need a strong Republican Party, not whatever this is. So they understand that part of it, because actually in Delaware, the Republicans are of no threat to them. They're weak. They're dying because nobody buys into their bullshit. Nobody wants that, really. Unless you're an ideologue and you don't want that. So we got supermajorities. Doesn't matter. The threat is coming from somewhere else. So people don't know what to sort of make of it. And I know that there is a there's a derangement syndrome, and I know it's making people's lives kind of miserable. And I didn't know whether or not you wanted to speak on that, maybe even in the general term, say.
I mean, do I go out my way to go look for Working Family Party posts on Facebook? No, I don't. Do I go out my way of looking in my comments to see if someone's telling me I'm not doing a certain thing? No, I mean, at this point, most of Delaware have my phone number, so you could just call me and tell me that yourself, right? But I think that when you know you're not doing what you're supposed to do, you're going to look over your shoulder. So why not just do what you're supposed to do? And it's like, the Democrats fight with the Democrats. Why? Then I just want, why? I'm supposed to be fighting them. I'm supposed to be fighting issues. We should be working together to get these things done. But, you know, apparently there had to have been a pressure cooker enter into, you know, the situation that, you know, if you're doing what you're supposed to do, why look over your shoulder? If you could stand by what you did, just stand by it or don't do it. That's it. That's my take of it. So, you know, I guess, Cheyenne, I gave you a compliment. So, you know. Yeah, I gave you a compliment.
I look at it like this. Yeah, people, it's sort of like the SB 21 thing, too. It's like, we want to say whatever we want to say because we kind of made the decision about what we need to do. And so we don't really want anybody questioning the shit that we're saying.
Look, we orchestrated this all behind closed doors. We had
just go along with it. Go along with it. And it's like, but I have questions. Why can't I? I'm an educator. I tell, there's no, we welcome questions. So in government, we don't want no one to question anything. So, like, J.D. Vance broke a trophy today. We're not going to question why in your mind would you even pick that up? We're just going to let it happen. And no one questioned, like, should we not tell him, should we say, hey, toddler, don't touch the thing. Don't touch it. Walk away. I have a one-year-old. We tell him all day long. Not for Lindy. Shout out to my Lyndon. But, like, so why? I don't understand.
Yeah, people, they don't want to be made to feel uncomfortable in their position, and that's just too bad.
Well, where's the, I tell my constituents, please hold me accountable to the things that I'm telling you that I'm going to, so where's that, maybe that's the taboo word here, is accountability. It's accountability is only for certain individuals. The rules, I can really dive into that one, is only set for certain individuals and is okay for other individuals to operate in a certain way. But you step out this parameter, you step out your box, shame, shame, shame on you. But we let these other individuals who step out of the box, and it's going to be celebrated. So I'm just like, so where is the consistency of accountability here? And I guess it's player by player. And if you are attached to a WFP, I guess, you know, let me just buckle up right now because I'm shaking in my knickers.
So, you know, this Working Families Party derangement is actually, all joking aside, an incredibly good sign. I just listened to a rough cut of one of the later Knights of Labor podcast episodes. And something that came up in that is that as the Knights started getting more people into the organization and more money, it almost like immediately redounded back into them, where, you know, all of these different companies were making their own sort of groups, lobbying groups, like Chamber of Commerce type groups, to fight back. You know, the forces of reaction will fight back, and so I take it as an honor that people would take their time to like, especially because these are some of the stupidest people that, I mean, they're talking about communism. They don't know what they're talking about. They're sending Xerox copies. I mean,
Xerox.
This is some low, Xerox, that's some low budget shit. So if that's what you got, I think we got your ass. I think we got you. But the larger point is, when you see people just scrambling, just doing the dumbest stuff, just being like, oh, they're commies. I'm like, what are you, with the John Birch Society? Mm-hmm. The fuck are you talking about? You know, I think it's an excellent, excellent sign. Yeah. And the joke, the real corny joke, they're neither working nor families. Mm. How dare you? Jess and Bill have a son. So how dare you?
Liars.
Liars.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's just stupid. Like, I know you think that that's, I guess you think that's funny. I guess we'll see how funny it is come next fall. And we'll all laugh and laugh and laugh. You know, I said it, I'll say it again. Seven representatives, right? With seven representatives voted against the corporate bill.
Mm-hmm.
None of those seven will have primary challengers, I predict, because there's nobody equipped to challenge them. And no one's going to go up against that machine. Remember the guy who told me Medina was going to lose?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I tried to circle back. He didn't want to circle back. I said, are we ready to circle back? He blocked me immediately. Nice. Yeah, those people are fine. Now, the representatives that voted for it, some of them, a lot of them are going to get challenged, and some of them are going to lose. And that's going to be real funny to me.
I mean, especially, it's interesting if the interest, like all the constituent calls that you got for mm-hmm. this one, like, bill that affects the nation and the world as well. Like, if the energy kind of stays even at a simmer for some time, it will really be interesting to see if your campaigns get additional support, if this issue comes back again. Get more volunteers. I don't know. Maybe this is an engagement, a time for engagement.
It definitely is. And I think that just from being out in the community, it's so much of the national things happening. It's challenging people to pay a closer eye to what's happening state level. So we're at a pivotal point, what we're doing down in Dover. It has to match your constituency. You have to pay attention. And also, it's kind of seem like people are a little fearful because we don't know what's going to happen next when we, you know, talk about national politics. Mm-hmm. Again, someone won't take a nap. We do know who knows how to hold a pen very well, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But they want to know, do my local officials have my back? And as we talk about what is a working, the protections of the working family. My district is a working families district, and I'm going to work to protect my working families every single day and their children, because this is who makes up Delaware. And we should have that in the forefront of our mind. It's like, I don't come to Dover to play with people's lives. If you have enough time to play with people's lives, then maybe you are one of the ones that should maybe have a primary and should be getting out, or you need something to force you to rethink, because we have the retirees, we have children, we have seniors, we have, again, the bulk of who makes up our economy and our state taxes, right? The working workers, families. Yeah. And all they want to do is have an investment with their children and make sure that they have, you know, home protection. Like, we're talking about, do you know that default mint on mortgages is going up, and the housing market, you talk about homelessness is increasing, food insecurity has not decreased. The food bank, it needs help right now. So we're living in those times where we should be thinking differently. We should be really reconsidering how we are investing our money into what areas, and have a commitment on that.
It's beautifully put. And yeah, I'll just close by saying I know that it can be very difficult to take a stand and be one of very few people.
Mm-hmm.
I know that it's stressful. I know that the environment isn't pleasant. But I've said this from the very beginning. I remember saying this sometime in the first maybe 20 episodes or 30 episodes. I remember saying some of this work is being done to make sure that the people who do think as we do and do want to do those things, universal programs to protect working families, to keep them here, and just to add value, because it adds value to the community and to your neighbors.
Exactly.
We are not going to abandon this. And we are not scared. We have these microphones, and we can put stuff on the internet, too. And we can organize people to go down to Dover, too. And we can organize people to primary you. And if you think that you have buttons you can push to scare me, well, you haven't pushed them yet. And I don't know if you've heard the show. You can go back, you know, years and years and listen. I mean, some people say you got to give it a year. I don't even know.
Right. You
got to give it a year to understand what
give
I'm doing.
Give it a year.
At least. And so, yeah, you can go back and sort of like analyze that to see if you're going to fucking scare me or if I'm going to stand with the people who stand up for working families. I mean, you could take that bet. But I'll tell you what, I don't scare easily. And we're going to stand behind the people who stand up for these issues. That's the end of it. Ray, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me. And as my students would say, clock it.
I love it. Bill, thank you.
Of course.
Carl. Incredible work with Storm the Fort, man. Just incredible. Thank you. I got on our side a chat of you know, the fellas that go play pool at the pub and stuff and watch the football. We were just talking about how good James and Jen's song came out at the end. And you produced that original. He's producing original music now.
Congratulations, Carl.
George Martin.
Yay.
See, he's in there. He's fiddling with the knobs. It's incredible.
And to bring it a little full circle, right? Early on, you said, like, you're kind of a nerd. Like, you read dissertations. And like, Carl has basically written a dissertation here that we're all looking forward to listening to.
Yeah, it's really
it's
great.
Pretty cool.
Hey, did anybody see that big BPG news today? Oh, boy. We can't get into it today, but one of my old faves is back in the news. You should probably go look it up, see what they're up to. Because we always have money to give to them. We always give them all little bonuses and...
Technically, it's from the Prosperity Partnership.
Right. You know what? Let's clock it.
Clock it.
Left is best, pals.